I am the Burb, and I have created this video to promote the idea of self-protectorate as the alternative to government. This is a new idea for our time, and I hope that you will pay close attention to this information as it has the potential to significantly help chart a better course for mankind's future. This video is the first in a series that teaches about the idea of self-protectorate. This video series will not only describe what self-protectorate is, but how it compares to government, and will leave you armed with valuable insights as to the nature and structure of the state and society, which will help lead you to the understanding that self-protectorate is the next logical step in the evolution of the state in order to bring about the most freedom and prosperity for all of mankind. As I have said, self-protectorate is the alternative to government. I'll explain more about this shortly. But first, I want to thank you for taking some time to watch this video and becoming informed about self-protectorate. You can also find additional information on this topic, including other videos, a recently published book all about self-protectorates, and weekly podcasts inclusive of the idea of self-protectorate by visiting betheburb.com. To introduce the idea of self-protectorate and put it in proper context, I'll first need to go over a few things with you. First, I'll be reviewing what a state is. It's very important to have a strong understanding of the concept of what a state is in order to understand the concept of self-protectorate. I will cover the three societal components of the state. These three components are absolutely necessary for the existence of any state. I'll also explain exactly what government is. You'd be surprised by how many people do not have a correct understanding of what government is. It's more surprising, however, to find out that government doesn't actually want the majority of the people to have a thorough understanding of exactly what it is and how it operates. I'll then reveal the awesome idea of self-protectorate, and you will see how this idea has such huge potential to alter the destiny of mankind to one of freedom, peace, and prosperity well into the future. I will also detail some of the aspects of a self-protectorate so you can get an idea of just what it will look like and how it will function. Now, there will only be time enough in this video to begin to go in depth on the operations of a self-protectorate, but hopefully it will pique your interest enough that you will want to watch the next video in the series. So, what is a state? If you want to define what a self-protectorate is, you will first need to define what a state is. This is vital to understand, as it is the state a self-protectorate is designed to serve. At times, referred to as a country or a nation, a state is a large group of people with shared cultural similarities and common interests residing in a geographical location with defined borders who have a common institution of authority to oversee the activities and operations of the people. It's important to note that the geographical location, you know, the land or the territory, have defined borders either using physical barriers, man-made or natural terrain, or regular patrols from agents of the state, meaning military or law enforcement, or some combination of the two. The shared interests and cultural similarities are important to understand because they are the glue that holds society together. Common language, common needs, common goals, similar or common belief systems, and understanding of laws also bind together societies found within states. Art reflects society, society reflects art, and a culture is made. It's important to note that if a state's cultural values shift in a large way over a relatively short amount of time, it can cause a breakdown of society where the people can quickly become divided against different factions that will eventually threaten to collapse the state as those groups will attempt to break away and form their own state. There are three societal components of any state, or what I also like to call the three pillars that support the state. If any one of these pillars are removed from the state collapses, but really, it's society that collapses. The first of these components is power. The second is authority. And the third and most important is law. Regarding the component of power, the people of the state are the power of the state. This statement speaks for itself. A state, or any organization for that matter, cannot exist without people. The people are the economic engine and engine of commerce for the state. The people pay taxes, but more importantly, the people build up the general infrastructure and wealth of the state, including advancements in science and technology in areas such as weaponry, defense, medical achievements, communications, engineering advancements, etc. Entire economies are based on the activities of the people and the value that those activities bring to society and to the state. Authority is the component that directs the power. This is where governments and self-protectorates come into play. Governments and self-protectorates are both societal institutions created by the people of the state in order to direct or control the power that is given to the state by the people. Like electricity being funneled down and then directed to specific areas of your home via wires, breakers, circuits, and wall outlets, the authority of the state is used to control and direct the power of the people. The state is responsible for the creation and maintenance of a common currency system so that the power of the people can be liquidated, and a portion can be taken by the state and spent on things like infrastructure projects, defense, and law enforcement. This liquefaction of the power of the people via a viable currency system is also the means by which society can advance in all fields, be it medicine, science, tech, construction, the arts, agriculture, and so forth. The idealized state is one that has both a large population and a roaring economic and currency system. This type of state typically spreads its influence and is widely regarded as a major power bloc among outside nations. Law is the component that sets the rules on how the power is to be directed by the authority of the state. The law is the ultimate control lever over the authority and power of the state. In other words, the law is what guides the authority because authority alone is insufficient in directing the power of the state. Going back to the analogy of the electricity in your home, if the authority is the wires, fuses, outlets, and electric boxes that control the flow of electricity in your home, then the law is the design of those wires, fuses, outlets, and electric boxes, but also the blueprint on where they are to go and the rules on how they are to be arranged in order to provide the maximum effectiveness of having electricity in your home and also the maximum amount of safety. The law is the key to understanding the difference between a government and a self-protectorate. The authority of the state can be placed into a government where the laws are subject to change, or the authority can be placed into a self-protectorate where the laws are unchangeable. Remember, the law is the ultimate control lever over the state. I also want to take a moment to point out here that the word power is used in reference to all three of these components. It's all about power. This is why governments are corrupt, because it's all about power. In government, the laws are allowed to be changed by a special few, and that special few end up changing the law for their own benefit. This is corruption. Power of the state. The power of the state is derived from the people residing within the state. The people are the power of the state. The people are the means of commerce or the economic engine from which the state derives taxes, fines, fees, etc., in order to fund the activities of the state. Just like any person or any organization needs power in order to operate and live, the state also needs power, and gets its power from the people that comprise the state. This power is divided up into small, tangible, and transportable units called money or currency, so it can be traded for goods and services. It is literally the labor and property of the people, and the expectations of the prospects of future labor from the people are what create valuations in markets and affect the perceived value of the currency and its potency in markets in the state and in trade with other states and markets. To sum it up, the power of the state comes from the people, meaning their labor and property. Authority of the state. A state has no more authority than what is given to it by the people. Authority is the right or ability to direct or control power. Authority can be limited, or it can be absolute. The more limited the authority, the freer a society is. The more absolute the authority, the less free a society is. However, if there is no authority, there is no state. The authority of the state directs the power of the state and can be organized and established into one of two types of institutions. One of these is government. Government is the most well-known institution of authority. Government is characterized by changeable law. Changeable law is corruptible law. The other institution of authority is known as self-protectorate. Self-protectorate is characterized by unchangeable law. Unchangeable law is incorruptible law. In a self-protectorate, there is no institutionalized corruption within the authority of the state. If you have ever thought that government is corrupt, you are not alone. Government is corrupt because government allows for the laws to change. If the state has the ability to change and alter the laws, then it places the people in a situation of perpetual confusion and duress. Politicians, bureaucrats, big banks, and big corporations thrive in this type of political environment. The environment of perpetual confusion and duress provides politicians and bureaucrats with the situation they need to enact new laws or abolish or change existing laws, thus further perpetuating the confusion and duress of the people. This is a perpetual situation of coercion against the people of the state, but that is exactly how the state maintains its authority in a government. Through coercive, if not forceful, means. Government operates on institutionalized corruption. It is intentionally built right into its systems. It's not like this at all in a self-protectorate. In a self-protectorate, the law is unchangeable, so there is no institutionalized corruption, and the people are on a level playing field when it comes to the practice and execution of the law. The people are compelled to obey the law rather than being coerced, forced, or manipulated into doing so. Please keep in mind that the authority of the state is how the power of the people is controlled and directed. The key word here is directed, how the power is directed. So for example, it is the power of the people that is used to fund wars or healthcare initiatives or any other and every activity of the state. It's wrong for people to think that government pays for anything. Government does not pay for anything. The people pay for everything. Government only appropriates the people's money through taxation and borrowing. In a self-protectorate, the state is forbidden from borrowing any money. It can set tariffs, fines, fees, and sales taxes, but cannot set or collect income or property taxes. The ability to borrow money is one of the largest failings of government. The state should not be allowed to borrow money from any source at all. Law of the state. Law is the ultimate control lever over the authority and power of the state. Laws are designed to guide or control the authority of the state. Laws are necessary to keep authority in check at every level. Since authority directs the power, there needs to be a check on the authority, and that comes in the form of law. Law that is changeable is corruptible. Corruptible laws undermine the credibility of the state. What most politicians and bureaucrats either don't recognize or don't care about is the fact that a system of corruptible law undermines the credibility of government and the state. For a state with a government, the people are always at some level aware of the corruption that takes place in their government due to the system that allows politicians and bureaucrats to change the laws. Bureaucrats may not care since they are not elected, but politicians who depend on elections to be placed into office are not served by this arrangement. This is the reason why politicians will lie and say one thing to get elected into office and then do another when in office, and will continue to lie in order to stay in office. The governmental systems of law change not only invite, but put intense pressure on politicians to change laws. The system can easily compromise politicians and cause them to become corrupt. Unlike a government, a self-protectorate uses a system of fixed, permanent, unchangeable, immutable law. Because all the laws for the state are solidified within the self-protectorate, there is no mechanism to add, alter, or abolish laws. What this means is that there is no institutionalized or systemic corruption in the self-protectorate. This arrangement can also provide for the maximum amount of freedom for the people. Just think about it for a moment. What I have just explained shows that government is intentionally designed to rely on a system of corruption to operate the affairs of the state. Conversely, self-protectorate is intentionally designed to rely on a system of incorruption, where there can be no corruption, to operate the affairs of the state. If you had the choice, would you rather live in a corrupt state, or would you rather live in a free state? Now that you have an understanding of what a state is and what the three societal components of the state are, I will delve more into exactly what government is before giving a larger reveal of information relative to self-protectorate. Government is the centralized or diffused institution of authority of the state characterized by law that is changeable. A lot of people like to think of government as the force of the state in which they live, but this is a misnomer. Government is not power, it is authority. It can only control and direct the power or a portion of the power of the state. If you've ever been evicted from a home or had your car repossessed, it wasn't the government doing the evicting. It was other people or businesses in the state whose power was being directed by government agencies, such as a sheriff's department. When two people get married, the state doesn't pay for the wedding aside from providing a judge if needed, but it does require the married couple to pay for a marriage license. As I pointed out earlier, government does not pay for anything, the people do. From a historical perspective, governments have had many, many different formats. However, history has shown that there are generally five types of government. Five types of government throughout history. And they are... Monarchy. Ruled by one over all, one makes law for all. This category includes dictators, emperors, really any government system that has a singular head of state that is responsible for both the creation, alteration, judgment, and execution of the laws. Generally, monarchs don't take orders from the people. They give the orders, and they are followed. The monarch is viewed as being the living embodiment of the state, which is why their subjects may even sometimes revere them as deities or as having direct contact with deity. Oligarchy. Rule by group over all, group makes law for all. Oligarchy is the most common form of government throughout history the world over. In fact, it's the most common form of government on the face of the planet today. In an oligarchy, a small and well-connected group directs the affairs of the state, and the people typically have no say in how the state is operated, much like a monarchy. In fact, going back to monarchies, there never really are any true monarchies in the actual sense of the word. A monarchy is an oligarchy that puts one of its members out front to speak for the group and draw attention away from any of the shadowy deeds done by the remaining oligarchs. Today, the United States government is an oligarchy, not a republic or democracy, as many have been misled to believe. Democracy. Oh, democracy. How you and I and everyone have all been taught to cherish democracy. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic here. Democracy means the rule by majority of all the people. The majority makes the laws for all. The problem with democracy is that it is a system that cannot last forever. It is mob rule because at least 51% of the population gets to determine the fate of the other 49%. Democracy drowns out minority voices, something vociferously unheard of in Western governments today. History has shown that democracies usually end up destroying themselves thanks to unchecked and misdirected authority. When democracies implode, they quickly transform into an oligarchy. You may hear politicians throw around the term democracy, but that is just because it sounds good. Helps them to score political points. Politicians who use the term democracy are engaging in a form of media warfare against the people of their state, keeping them confused and in duress. The reality is that democracies do not have politicians, since it is the people by direct vote that settle any issues and create or abolish laws. Politicians only exist in two types of government, oligarchy and republic. Republic, rule by law over all people. The word republic comes from Latin and means the public thing, or the law. Governments that claim to have a republic do so under the guise of representative democracy. In other words, there are a handful of people selected to have permission by the people to create, alter, and abolish the laws. Originally, a republic was devised as a form of government that relied solely upon law as the way to control the authority of the state. In a republic, the people do not have any direct say in how the authority of the state is to be used. The idea of a republic is that the law is supposed to be held inviolate and above all else. And while this idea works the best to solidify the support of the people, it fails when combined with the auspices of government, which demands that laws are changeable. A republic in a government means that the law is not held inviolate, as the law is frequently violated through alteration or obliteration. So instead of the law being held inviolate and above all, being held as the standard to which all people must adhere, the law then becomes the tool of politicians who want to have the special privilege of changing the law for their own interests rather than the interests of the people. In fact, the United States government was originally intended to be a republic, or so Ben Franklin put it, and no, the people have not held on to it. The U.S. government today is an oligarchy, and the U.S. Constitution has allowed it to happen, this being one of several failures of the U.S. Constitution. A republic only really works in a self-protectorate. In a self-protectorate, the law is unchangeable, so it is incorruptible, and the law is actually held inviolate above all. You see, the different types of government are all about who gets to change the law. It's about how the law is permitted to be changed. On the other hand, self-protectorate doesn't allow anyone to change the law. Which system do you think is more fair? One where a select few get to change the law and are then in effect above the law, or one where the law cannot be changed and where the law equally applies to all? And moving on to the last type of government, this one will probably shock you. Anarchy. Yes, that's right. Anarchy is a type of government. Anarchy means rule by one person over their self, or over their self and their immediate family. Now, you may be thinking that anarchy is the opposite of any kind of government, right? People are conditioned to think of anarchy as chaos or a chaotic moment. Anarchy is a form of government. It is direct self-governance where the authority of the state has been diffused among the people, and the people are able to act as their own agents in making and enforcing their own laws. Now, there are some who believe that a true anarchy is the best form of peaceful government. However, anarchies lack any societal cohesion, and they don't stick around long. Because the power of the state and the authority to direct it are so diffused, the state cannot act for its own benefit in practically anything in any meaningful way. Getting people to work together and coordinate their resources for a roadworks project on a voluntary basis in an anarchy might work well on paper or as a nice thought, but for all practical purposes, it does not work in reality. With no common institutionalized societal mechanism to gather and direct the authority of the people, the state cannot operate to protect its boundaries or its people, and the state can be easily taken over by foreign invasion or political intrigue. In fact, throughout history, anarchies have only existed as tiny blips caving to any organized groups of people who have created a different type of government. Anarchy has been shown to be not much more than a tool of revolutionary change where anarchists want to create an authority vacuum that they will fill with their own oligarchy. So these are the five types of government. And I know that you might be saying something like, only five? You might also be saying, well, what about aristocracy or technocracy or kritarchy or socialism or communism, etc.? So I'm going to take a moment here and explain. First, understand that capitalism, fascism, socialism, and communism are economic systems. They are not, nor have they ever been, a form or type of government. The way that a state's laws are shaped is ultimately what determines what kind of economic system the state operates. So far as other lesser-known types of government, such as aristocracy and technocracy, they are lumped in under oligarchy because an oligarchy is simply rule by group. The five types of government can really be narrowed down to just two, and that is oligarchy and republic. But as I previously said, republics don't mix well with government because the law changes in government. This is the reason why oligarchy is the most prolific type of government in the history of the world, and oligarchies are all corrupt by their very nature since they must have changeable laws. So if government is the problem in that it often enables, creates, and perpetuates corruption within the state, then wouldn't you want something other than a government to be in charge of your state? Is there an alternative to government? Yes, there is, and it is called self-protectorate. The solution to the problem of institutionalized state corruption is self-protectorate. No more institutionalized state corruption. That's what everyone wants. No corruption and fairness in the law with equal protections under the law for everyone. So what exactly is a self-protectorate? A self-protectorate is the centralized institution of authority of the state that is characterized by law that is not changeable. That's the bottom line. The law in a self-protectorate is not changeable. It is the authority of the state organized as a true republic, meaning rule by law, where the law is held inviolate above all else, meaning it cannot change, which has a code of fixed and permanent law, unchangeable law. You see, it's the fact that laws can be changed, altered, and abolished that allows corruption to come into government and for the state's authority to lose credibility with the people. Whether it be with a monarchical system where the business owners are constantly trying to win the favor of the king so he may bless them with lands, property, and gifts, or whether it be the large corporations that bribe, lobby, the legislature in a government-run republic to make laws favorable to their industry, it's all the same. Corruption happens in any and every governmental system simply by the fact that the laws can be changed at any time and for any reason. In a government, the question is not about whether or not the law should be changed, but rather who gets to change the law. Who will control the levers of power, which is the law. In a self-protectorate, there is no question because the law never changes. A self-protectorate does not allow for the law to be changed in any capacity. There is no mechanism, no body of people, no singular person within its institution that allows for the law to be altered, abolished, or to have new laws made. The law in a self-protectorate is unchangeable, fixed, and permanent. A self-protectorate is a true republic whose laws are made by the people in one grand convention and instituted as the fixed and permanent laws of the state. The question here is how will the law of a self-protectorate be established? If the law is permanent and unchanging, then it must be total and complete when it is established. It makes sense, then, that if all the laws must be established at once, that there is thoughtful consideration and enough time granted to formulate the laws of the self-protectorate. In other words, a convention must be held with trusted representatives from each jurisdiction and industry to formulate the laws. A people's convention, where laws are voted on after they are written to see which would be best to benefit the people. Everyone understands there is a need for businesses and banks, but businesses and banks should not be granted any special privileges or rights above that of men and women. It's a shame when a business or bank can be given rights like that of an actual person. The people's liberties and property should be protected by the state before any privileges by businesses or banks. For every self-protectorate, a grand convention must be convened with trusted representatives and experts from each industry and jurisdiction. These trusted representatives from each jurisdiction, from the state, and from every industry, their most noble, honest, moral, and brightest people, will all meet together in a grand convention to establish the charter or constitution of the self-protectorate and determine the laws for the self-protectorate to be established in a code of laws. A self-protectorate's law is established in two parts. The first part is by a charter constitution, which is literally a contract between the self-protectorate and the people of the state. The charter is a document granting authority from the people, the sovereigns of the state, to the self-protectorate. The people are the sovereigns of the state. The constitution portion of the document is what lays out the structure of the self-protectorate and how it will operate. In this contract, the people of the state agree to relinquish certain individual authority to the self-protectorate in exchange for the benefits that the self-protectorate will provide. The self-protectorate agrees to establish the law that will guide the authority given to it by the state and will use the power of the state as prescribed by that authority and law for the protection of the people, their liberties, and their property from foreign and domestic acts of violence. The self-protectorate's laws are established by a code of laws. The code of laws is the library of all the laws of the self-protectorate. They are cataloged, indexed, and are easily searchable by all the people of the state. The code of laws supports the established structure of the self-protectorate that is found in the charter constitution. As I previously said, the charter constitution is an agreement between the sovereigns of the state, meaning the people of the state, and the self-protectorate. The agreement is literally a contract. Make no mistake, it is literally a contract. Each person in the self-protectorate can sign it and declare that they agree with the document and the code of laws it supports. If you decide not to sign it, the self-protectorate still has the obligation to protect your freedoms and your rights, but you will be denied all privileges. Now, that isn't as bad as it sounds. I'll explain more on it coming up shortly. Signing the document means that the self-protectorate will protect your freedoms, your rights, and your privileges. Signing and agreeing to it is more of a declaration to the people of the state that you have read the document, you understand it, and you agree to abide by the laws of the self-protectorate. The Code of Laws indexes and houses all the laws of the state. It allows for easy searches by the people so that the people will not be caught in a state of perpetual duress where they are beholden to the whims of changing laws. It is absolutely baffling how a system of changeable laws found in government can be considered legitimate. Here's the issue I take with changeable laws. As an example, if you look at the laws of the United States today, there are literally millions of laws. There are 50 individual states and 5 U.S. territories, each with their own books of laws. And let's not forget about Washington, D.C. Each of these has further jurisdictions that have their own books of laws as well. Take into consideration all the counties and municipalities in these states, and you literally have millions of laws on the books that cover varying jurisdictions. Is it possible for you, or for anyone for that matter, to learn or even to read all the written laws in the United States? Of course not! Also, keep in mind that laws can be created, altered, or abolished at any time for any reason. This condition puts you and I into a condition of perpetual confusion and duress where we cannot hope to understand all the laws that we are subject to. Now moving on to the format of the Charter Constitution. The Charter Constitution is a written contract which lays out the liberties, the freedoms, rights, and privileges of the people, the structure of the self-protectorate, and all the duties and responsibilities the self-protectorate has in order to act on behalf of the state and the people. In a self-protectorate, what are commonly known as rights, privileges, and freedoms are lumped together with the term liberties. Freedoms are those liberties that cannot be taken away by the state. Rights are those liberties that can be restricted by the state. Privileges are those liberties that are permitted by the state. I know that many people do not clearly understand the concept of privilege. Privilege is a liberty you are granted after earning it. You must work for it to gain it, and you must work to keep it. A self-protectorate's responsibility is to protect the lives and property of the people from acts of foreign and domestic violence. That being the case, the self-protectorate will recognize that there are activities people do that are potentially harmful to other people, like driving a car, flying an airplane, or performing surgery. Each one of these activities carries inherent risks that can potentially harm another person up to and including death. The self-protectorate is authorized by the people to issue licenses in order to restrict any person from performing an activity that has the potential to harm or kill another person. Those activities are known as privileges. As I stated earlier, if a person does not sign the Charter Constitution, then they will be denied the privileges permitted by the state. However, they are still considered a citizen, and all their freedoms and their rights will still be protected. But if they sign, then they will become not just a citizen of the self-protectorate, but a member, and will have access to earn and retain privileges. A self-protectorate's Charter Constitution recognizes all people's liberties, and they are listed first in the document. This portion is first in the document because it is the most important. The next portions of the Charter Constitution deals with the structure of the self-protectorate. The structure is detailed after the section or sections laying out the liberties of the people. This portion of the Charter Constitution details the offices of the self-protectorate as well as term limits and the selection system used to fill offices. There are definite established term limits. Incumbents do not exist in a self-protectorate. After the portion on the structure of the self-protectorate is the portion detailing all the duties and responsibilities the self-protectorate has in order to act on behalf of the state and the people. This portion lays out the rights and the privileges that can be restricted by the state. Now moving on to the format of the Code of Laws. The Code of Laws is the library of all the laws of the self-protectorate. It is the permanent manual of the laws of the state, which is indexed and is readily accessible to every citizen of the self-protectorate. The Code of Laws is permanent and cannot be added to or taken away from. Within the Code of Laws, different sections deal with different aspects of society and the necessary laws that apply to those parts of society. The laws are meant to be simple and allow for a great degree of flexibility in certain areas, or can even provide for greater rigidity in certain areas simply by the way the laws are written. However, no matter what the law says, it is subject to interpretation by the judges of the self-protectorate. The Charter Constitution and the Code of Laws together form the foundation of the self-protectorate. They are the documents from which all authority is drawn for the self-protectorate, and the self-protectorate is the institution that directs all power granted to it from the people. It is only through a self-protectorate that the three societal pillars of the state are unable to be corrupted. This creates a situation of maximum freedom and fairness for the people. Finally, what does a self-protectorate look like? Unchangeable law. In a self-protectorate, the law is unchangeable, fixed, and permanent. Unlike a government, there is no mechanism to change the law in a self-protectorate. There is no legislature, no Congress, or parliament to draft and pass new laws. In other words, there are no men or women for big banks and big corporations to bribe. There is no legislature. There are judicial officers. These are judges. A board of all seated judges comprises the head of the self-protectorate. There are executive officers. They are presidents, mayors, etc. Not governors, however. The title governor cannot be used in a self-protectorate because it is not a government. Maybe it can be replaced with the title of protector? How about protector supreme? Does that sound too corny? Well, regardless, each self-protectorate has a chief executive. There are two sides in a self-protectorate. The judicial side and the executive side. The judicial side handles the court systems. The court systems are key to the operation of the self-protectorate. They are the societal pressure relief valve system where the people can go for a redress of their grievances. The executive side handles the military systems, law enforcement systems to include the prisons, the infrastructure systems, and the financial systems of the state. Judicial system. It is operated by all seated judges. The judges have staff that works for the court system to assist them in their duties and responsibilities. The Charter Constitution determines how many judges serve. All the judges for a self-protectorate are selected by the people via a selection system. Not election, but selection. Judges serve for only one term. The length of that term is found in the Charter Constitution. It's up to the people to determine via the creation of the Charter Constitution just how long the term for a judge should be. 1 year may be too short, anything more than 6 years may be too long. A 2 or 4 year term may be more appropriate. Executive system. It is operated by a single executive. The executive, however, is supported by their staff, which can take a variety of positions as assistants to provide the executive with the most pertinent information regarding issues with the state and self-protectorate. The Charter Constitution determines the scope of the executive's office. It will spell out what areas the executive has authority to enforce law and how it is generally to be accomplished. Executives are selected by the people via a selection system, not election, but by selection. Executives serve for only one term. The length of that term is found in the Charter Constitution. It's up to the people to determine via the creation of the Charter Constitution just how long the term for an executive should be. 1 year may be too short. Anything more than 8 years may be too long. A 4 or 6 year term may be more appropriate. Self-protectorate uses a selection system and a recall system for accountability with its office holders. Judges and executives are installed via a selection system instead of pure elections or appointments to choose the candidate that will fill the vacancy of an office. Self-protectorate also uses a recall system to help ensure accountability of the judges and executives. Judges and executives are subject to removal from office via an established recall system prior to the end of their term. This recall system helps ensure accountability of the judges and executives while they are in office. So here is the gist of how a selection system works. First of all, the candidate vying for office must register. This may seem like a simple step, but it also requires that the candidate submit what is essentially a resume detailing their education, experience, and background. This information will be made publicly available to all the people in the self-protectorate so that each person can scrutinize the information. The candidate goes through a background check. A criminal background check is performed, and if the candidate has any prior criminal convictions rising to a felony, or if they have any pending charges that could land them a felony criminal conviction, they will be immediately disqualified from the selection process. This background check is not just to detect any criminal improprieties, but also to detect whether or not a candidate is directly related to any current or former office holder of the self-protectorate. Nepotism is not allowed in a self-protectorate. No oligarchies or family dynasties. If the candidate is found to be immediately related to a current or former office holder, they are immediately disqualified from the process. Governments don't typically have background checks for politicians. Maybe they should. The candidate will then proceed to take a polygraph or other approved deception detection test. The results of the test will not count for qualification to continue the process. However, the results will be publicly posted for all persons of the self-protectorate to scrutinize. Governments don't typically have polygraphs for politicians. Maybe they should. The candidate is then required to take an approved basic intelligence test that will cover topics for items and issues covering the office that they are vying for. The results of the test will not count for qualification to continue the process. However, the results will be publicly posted for all persons of the self-protectorate to scrutinize. Governments don't typically require politicians to take a basic intelligence test. Maybe they should. Then there is an election by majority vote. The candidate that gets the most votes out of the popular vote wins the election. But the candidate must then also be unanimously appointed by all of the seated judges of the self-protectorate. If even one judge disagrees, then the candidate will not be allowed to take office and the selection process starts over. The structure of the self-protectorate found in the Charter Constitution will determine all other issues with the selection system. The core idea behind the selection system is a job interview. These positions are literally jobs, and the people are their employers, so why not go through all the hoops to find the best candidate? This is exactly what successful businesses and banks do every day. Should the people expect less from their civil servants? And here is how a recall system works in a self-protectorate. The recall of any office holder, judge, or executive can be commenced by any citizen of the self-protectorate. They will need to file an application at the appropriate state office. The application will provide space for the reasons as to why the office holder should be removed from office. The applicant can also provide physical evidence to support their assertions. The removal of any office holder will require a minimum of a 75% majority vote by all citizens of the self-protectorate. If the threshold is met, the office holder will be immediately removed from office. The Charter Constitution will spell out all other details pertinent to the recall system. That's it for this part of the Introduction to Self-Protectorate video series. I hope that this has been informative and inspiring for you. The key takeaway from this is that there is an alternative to government, and it is called self-protectorate. I am the Burb. Join me and fight corruption by demanding systems of unchangeable law and promoting righteous change. Learn more about self-protectorate at betheburb.com. Buy the book. Tell your friend, tell your family. There is an alternative to government. Self-protectorate will provide a better future for mankind. Until next time, stay strong.